Hello, and welcome to my show, the Energetic Agriculture Podcast. I'm David Wexler, and I'm going to show you how you can massively improve the growth of your plants using electricity, magnetism, and beyond. In this episode is my first interview starring a close friend of mine, Ray Lee Bacon. He and I became friends through the Energetic Agriculture Facebook group, where we chatted with each other about the various ways of growing, with electroculture, magnetoculture, and especially how the energies of higher consciousness and earth energies play a role in the positive growth of crops and mankind. Here's a brief introduction about Ray. Ray will inspire you to delve deeper into the seemingly mysterious and even mystical communication between the food you eat and the interconnected cosmos you are a part of. As an award-winning organic gardener, Ray has more than 10,000 hours of direct experience growing a diversity of edible plants in a challenging climate. With massive yields, he has generated a farm income considered 60 times the norm per square meter. Helping nature lovers create remarkable gardens, he blends pragmatism with the paranormal through his pioneering research into cosmoculture design. He teaches others how to harness magnetic forces and subtle energies for the purpose of growing nutrient-dense food and beautiful spaces. In this episode, I'm going to introduce Ray, and he's going to tell us some of his backstory and how it relates to our world of growing food with energies of all different kinds. Furthermore, as you know, he's my co-host on the Energetic Agriculture Facebook group, and is my partner in a number of ongoing ventures. Let's all give Ray a warm welcome, and let's dive right in. Hey, Ray, how's it going? Welcome to the show.
Ah, David, this has been a long time coming. I'm super stoked to have this conversation with you.
Me too. I know we have gotten to know each other over the past year. I met you through the Energetic Agriculture Facebook group, and it's been a real pleasure having having a friendship that's been growing over time. And I'm super stoked to invite you onto the show and to share our love of energetic agriculture together. So
yeah, man, this is awesome. Let's go see what comes out here.
Okay, great. To get things started, I'd like to introduce you to the audience. And so perhaps you could tell us something about your background and how you came into this world. And let's hear your story.
Well, let me say, I won't jump too far back. And I'll just share with you that I'm a Canadian who currently lives in Italy with a family, beautiful wife, two young children, and I came to Italy about 10 years ago for love. My wife and I, we got married shortly thereafter when I moved here, sight unseen, and we both had this dream of starting some kind of, to be honest, I wanted to create an institute of a healing center of sorts, and she did too. But, you know, we had a child pretty early on with the move, and immediately I started growing microgreens in my kitchen. And pretty quickly that turned into a full-time business, whereby my wife and I managed about, towards the last couple years before COVID, we had about 40 restaurant clients in a 200-mile radius and a few distributors, and we were running a business full-time and living on a homestead. And that is how I really started out, was getting my hands right in the dirt out of necessity for my family, and moved into other forms of agriculture and production to only discover along the way many unusual phenomena that has completely pivoted my perspective on plants, ecology, and life.
Oh, that's pretty... So maybe you could tell us some more, you know, let's pull on that thread. So what types of things did you discover?
Well, you know what? The first thing that I observed that was definite for me, and I suspect your listeners are up for this. I killed a couple trees with my thoughts and my emotions early on in my career as a farmer, and that was my first gateway into a whole world of possibilities.
I've never heard of such a thing, and I'm on the edge of my seat. Like, what the heck? how the heck could you possibly kill it with your thoughts? Tell us more.
Well, I can say that what happened was, frankly, I needed to create a greenhouse for growing our microgreens. I had to move out of the kitchen. I wanted to move away from using artificial lights, and I was motivated to build this greenhouse in a short window of time. And the only location available to us was right adjacent a giant cedar tree, which was casting an enormous shadow that infringed upon this prospective greenhouse. And, you know, at that stage in my life, I wasn't as intuitive, I wasn't as sensitive to the needs of other organisms, and frankly, I decided that tree had to go. And I literally spoke out loud in the presence of my wife. I said, "This tree has to go. It's going to die. I'm going to cut it down." And I said it with pure emotion. Like there was raw emotion. Also, you know, a level of agitation, because I felt the financial need to get going on this project, and my wife was very reluctant about killing the tree. So the truth is after I vocalized that, a tree that had been there for probably 30, 40 years, within 2 months, it died.
Like it started dropping its leaves. Like, how did you know it died?
It's an evergreen tree, and the needles started dropping, and very soon after that, it changed color, and it was dead.
That is so freaking crazy. You know, just recently I was listening. I was catching myself up on the topic of radionics and all sorts of neat stuff. And there was a researcher, Cleve Baxter, who did some experiments with plant biofeedback, where he'd hook them up to a biofeedback device, and he would have this intention of, I believe, burning a leaf. And then the plants would recognize that and respond. So that was... And that, I thought that was like super crazy and super cool, but this is so like next level. Like the plants actually like listened to you and just shriveled up and died.
Well, here's the thing, David, because it started this way, this discovery, which frankly is just an observation, because what led me to other things thereafter was the realization that there is this hidden responsibility and power that goes unseen. And frankly, it wasn't a coincidence for me, because it was so sudden. And it wasn't the only phenomena that would lead me to consider this inherent power. Speaking on the relationship of Clive Baxter and the secret life of plants is what gave him the greatest, that was my first introduction to him, was The Secret Life of Plants, which for the listeners, if they haven't read that book, it is a must. But you know, over the years, I've observed phenomena like this, and being very curious and analytical, not just intuitive, I want to understand the actual mechanism behind it. What is going on? And I've heard other curious phenomena, anecdotal stories from the Amazon jungle and from jungle, subtropical, tropical jungles in Malaysia with indigenous populations having direct affinity with specific trees and plants in their tribal vicinity. And researchers, explorers, European in origin, who have documented firsthand these accounts and have demonstrated very clearly that there is a direct relationship between the steward of a plant or a higher organism, such as a tree, a direct relationship between the steward and the organism itself that develops, that is creating a link that occurs irrelevant of distance and time.
In fact, that idea is captured in cultures all over the world, from the Aborigines of Australia and America and beyond. There's this idea of, say, unity consciousness, in that we're all connected and we're all one on some level, on a spiritual level. And I've also heard that some of the Native American tribes, and this probably goes for all indigenous populations, where they work on when they do their farming activities, that's just one part of it. That's one part of the whole endeavor, where the other side of it is building a relationship with the plants and the soil and the environment, and connecting with them on a number of levels.
Well, and I think on that note, as Westerners who live within a modern materialistic framework, we don't have the foundational cultural understanding of these kind of phenomena to even give it a place, a bookmark. And with that in consideration, we look at indigenous cultures from the perspective that they are stewarding lands with their hands. But I dare say they're directly communing with all of the elements of the bioregions that they inhabit, to the point where they are not only genetically adapted to all of the environmental factors therein, temperature, the circadian rhythm of that particular zone, etc. They're in tune with all of the organisms that are inhabiting that place, but on levels that go beyond our rational Western understanding of just independent parts that are observing each other. I think it's more like circles that are intersecting.
I could see that. Hey, let's get back to that story that you were telling us about your background. I'm sure we're going to come back to this over and over. There's a lot of details tree. Here that we could dive into.
So can you just rehash out where we were going with that? I was speaking on the tree and killing the tree.
Right. You came to Italy. Right. You came to Italy with your wife. You started a family over there. You got into the microgreen business out of necessity. And okay. The tree had to go, and it left.
Yeah, the tree had to go. And I built a tiny greenhouse and I ramsackled my way and bootstrapped my way from the point of very little, almost nothing as a business, to growing it considerably in a period of a few years. And, you know, the years that followed that incident were the hardest years of my entire life. Full stop. So much so that it's you know, I feel traumatized to my core, frankly.
What happened?
Well, you know, it was, for me, it was literally the hero's journey. You know, it was the dark night of the soul. And for me, what that represented was this incredible feeling of loneliness, isolation, and frankly, desperation, a kind of anxiety and existential crisis of identity that I wouldn't wish upon anybody.
Mm.
And I say that, you know, I feel quite vulnerable actually saying this, but the truth is, I got into farming and working with plants from an idealistic framework, you know, with a background in permaculture, trained as a holistic nutritionist, wanting to integrate regenerative land management practices with the ideals of human nutrition and what food can be in its maximal form. And I was in a box. I was in a box. I was literally trapped in a box, because in order to make the financial needs of my family met, I had to make sacrifices in my ideology. And I had to do things that weren't in alignment with my spirit. And combined with that, there was this whole, I won't go into the full depth of it, but frankly, I was isolated. I didn't speak the language. I worked, you know, 60 to 70 hours a week. And over a period of a few years with a newborn child, I didn't have the capacity to actually integrate into the society. And I was completely isolated. There were months that went by where I didn't speak to anybody, hardly my wife, because she was overwhelmed with the whole lifestyle change. And I'm sharing this frankly because maybe there's listeners here, maybe you as a listener can relate to this, maybe later in your life you may relate to this should you go down the path of being a farmer. Because frankly, farming is probably the most undervalued occupation next to nurses and teachers, and one of the most difficult occupations, especially when you're doing it as a small scale producer within the greater production system and the confines of the global economy as it is.
And so, sorry, if I may, what happened during your experience with your experience, your farming experience, that brought you to that you know,
point that of existential view? Crunch?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'll tell you a story of what I saw as the climax of that, and that frankly was it was the absolute climax. It was December and it was cold. I was continuing to produce, and that whole month we were heating our space. We had a lot of overhead and expenses as a business, and we were literally working, knowing full well that all the work we were doing during that month was only going to break even once we netted all of our costs. And I continued regardless, because if I didn't, I wouldn't have had enough cash flow to actually pay for my rent and other needs. So that month, I was really, really disgruntled. You know, I'd gone the whole summer working off. I was exhausted. I needed a break. And knowing that I was working for nothing, you know, it was very hard on my spirit. And I can remember going into this room where I had a hot water tank that was about 2 meters off the ground. So I'd say about 6 feet. And it was leaking. And I had a bucket that was catching the water from this tank beneath me. And I... Oh, man. This is a bit shameful. Should I tell this story? I feel a bit reluctant. But I didn't have time to fix it. Okay? And I was really stressed out. And this is where I go into some more of my paranormal-like experiences that I've had. When I would get really angry, really emotional, things would just break. Water lines would burst. And this was a moment, when I look back now, that very thing happened. I'm reaching up. I have to pull away this bucket of freezing cold water that had been accumulating over the last 2 days. It's above my head. It's that 6 feet off the ground, below the hot water heater, and I'm yanking it and it's stuck, it's not coming. And as I do that, a line of water connecting the tank bursts. And right as it bursts, I pull this hot water, this cold water bucket below the hot water tank abruptly, and that water dumps all over me. And I was completely irrational. I literally snapped. That was the moment. If I look back, it was the ultimate climax of this dark night of the soul, so to speak. And I snapped utterly and completely, and I was cursing like a maniac. Absolutely insane. Punching things, kicking things, scrambling. I left the room that I was in, and outside there was this wooden cover. It was like a blind that was covering the window frame. Okay, the window frame of this structure was empty. So there's this thin piece of wood, and I punched it, and I punched it as hard as I could, only to discover immediately behind this piece of wood was a big piece of rebar.
Ooh.
And I broke my hand. I broke my hand. And jeez. In that moment of release, I collapsed on the ground and I cried and I screamed. I mean, that I can't think of any other moment in my life where I just broke down utterly and completely. And in that moment, it's almost like, I don't know, I found God or I found something greater than myself, and I released myself and my burden, and I said, I can't do this myself. I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. And the truth is I did. I kept doing it. Once I settled, I forgot what I had vocalized, and I went right back to this old pattern, my ego of wanting to soldier on like a madman, holding the burden of all my ideology of wanting to be a successful small-scale farmer when I was only keeping my head above water. I continued to carry over 100 trays a week for the next 3 weeks during the month of December with a broken hand, knowing that I wasn't making any money. It was utterly insane. But I did it because I felt I had to. And it was my prison.
I understand. And I don't. I mean, I can't imagine going through those types of experiences. Yet I'm sure all of us have gone through similar experiences to various degrees at one time of or another in our lives. And if you, the listener,
if you haven't experienced something like that, good on ya. But you know, I think if you're going to be a fully actualized human being, at some point in your life, you're going to experience some form of breakdown. And I just hope that when you do, you rebuild yourself better.
So how did that experience bring you forward into your interest in this realm of energetic agriculture?
Well, you know, that moment, looking back, it was a moment where it clicked that my emotion as a steward of that land base was impacting not just the living organisms that co-inhabited that space, but was influencing what seemed to be abiotic, non-living physical matter, a water line that bursts. I mean, that if that's not a realization that we have inherent power that goes unseen until it is revealed, I don't know what is. And for me, that was the big wake-up call, that holy smokes, I, for better or for worse, and the truth is, up until this point, it was for worse, was negatively impacting my land base and actually creating the very conditions that were leading to my suffering.
Yeah, it's crazy how things tend to work that way. I mean, there's, you know, there's a very big world out there that talks about this idea of law of attraction, about the way that we feel, the way that our, the things that we pay attention to with our thoughts and our hearts has a real effect upon all of our lives. And it's really interesting that it's more than just this this woo-woo world of law of attraction, but there's something physical to it. And in fact, there's a lot of researchers who have delved into this idea of how our consciousness affects the reality around us. There have been military programs that look to utilize that for the benefit of military type of missions. In fact, when you were talking about your story earlier on about the things would break in your life, it just made me think about this scene from the movie Men Who Stare at Goats. I don't know if that's the real title. Did you happen to see that movie?
I didn't. So fortunately for listeners who may have not seen it, you may have to prelude that a bit.
Yeah. So it's been a number of years, but basically this movie talks about this program from the military. I forgot what the name of the program was, but I think the movie had Kurt Russell in it, and he was managing a team of psionic operatives who were studying. It was just crazy.
If there's one domain where this information has been well researched and documented, it's for the purpose of national security, whether that's in Russia or the Soviet Union or whether that's in the United States. You can guarantee it. It's been weaponized.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's been going on for decades.
Remote viewing to, you know, the recent stories behind a place called Skinwalker Ranch. Maybe that's for another episode. But there's certainly some really terrifying applications of this kind of content that's used for the purpose of inflicting harm on other people. And you know, that's not what I am about. You know, I definitely learned with that tree that with great power comes great responsibility. And I, you know, I love Spider-Man, so it's important to, you know, because as a grower, because that's the truth. Like, you're a grower, David. Listeners here obviously have their hands dirty, or they want to get their hands dirty, and they want to do it with a level of conscious intent and direct attention that creates a beneficial result. And I can tell you 100%, focusing on microgreens, which are a short-lived crop. The crop cycle is anywhere from 3 weeks to 1 week in the summer. A very fast turnover rate. There's nothing else, maybe sprouts, but nothing else you can grow in soil that turns over that fast. So instead of going through 1 year grow cycles with plants, I went through 500 grow cycles. And within those parameters, I was able to observe directly how my emotional state, regardless of my attention and my care to those plants, influenced the outcome, the yield, the quality, and the resistance to disease. My emotional state.
That's absolutely crazy. And that's something
it's observable. I would love. Anybody can do it. You just have to grow them consistently. And you can make that observation. I mean, the truth is if you're growing microgreens as a hobby for pleasure, you're never, in theory, unless you've got other life factors that are influencing you in that moment, you're never pushing yourself to your extreme boundaries where you're going to be having days where you're not emotionally stable. So maybe you won't observe that your emotional state causes more disease and damping off disease and mildew and fungal disease. But it does.
I'm amazed at that, these statements you're putting out there. And because I tend to do most of my growing outdoors in the garden, with a little bit of growing indoors early on, but because I'm not doing cycle after cycle, I don't notice these effects of my consciousness. Although I did go through a period where I got depressed for some period of time, where all of the experiments I was doing were simply not working. And I went for years where everything worked very successfully. And then I went through another period of about a year where things just did not work out at all. And I didn't make the connection until later on, but I think you're onto something where our consciousness does affect the way that the things grow around us.
Well, you know, and I would take that a step further, David, and I would say for our listeners that the consciousness factor is the most important factor of all. When you are using additional tools, whether those are antennas, whether those are pyramids, okay, utilizing more of the passive electroculture tools and devices, it is my opinion at this moment, and I may change that, but it is my opinion that these tools are actually more consciousness augmentation tools, what I call cats, like meow, cat, than they are tools that are catalyzing subtle energy from cosmic and telluric forces. You know, I think the human influence from a quantum level, as the observer, as the interactor, as the one who is actually utilizing these tools with some conscious intent, that that person is actually the mediator between these two forces of the heavens and the earth. And as the mediator, we are amplifying this mediation through the vector of our energetic resonance that is coming forth from our heart center. And that is being amplified by the very tools that we are using as antennas.
Wow. I could totally see that. And we're approaching the end of our time here. And well, I think gosh, that would be a great topic. Fast. Yeah. I think this is a great topic that we could talk more about some other time. In fact, there's so much that we could dive into within all of these realms that we've discussed here. So I think I'm really looking forward to continuous conversations with you. And I'm really
eager like to see where David, this goes. I really would. I hope your listeners receive some value from this. I mean, frankly, I just feel like I just put my heart on the table. And if anybody carried on to the end of the podcast, you have my utmost gratitude for listening to that. But I hope it put the point home, frankly, that you as a grower who are listening, I strongly feel that you have to tap into that part of yourself. You have to know why you're doing what you're doing, what is moving you to do what you're doing, what's giving you the inspiration and the courage to do what you're doing, and to leverage that for the betterment of not just yourself and your family by growing high nutrient dense food, but for the betterment of life itself. And that's what I hope we're all going to do as energetic growers.
That's very well said. There's more to growing than meets the eye. It's something that affects everything around us and more than just the plants that are right in front of our face. And that we take into the body as well. It's an all-encompassing thing that affects our environment, the people around us, and consciousness is really at the basis of everything. So with that, thank you very much, Ray.
Thanks, David.
It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show, and we look forward to having you on much more of the time.
I'd like that, and yeah, well, let's leave it at that.
Okay, sounds great. Signing off. Talk to you guys next time.
Ciao from Ciao. Italy.
Okay, see you later. So that's been my interview with Ray. I hope you really enjoyed hearing about his backstory and how energy and consciousness affects the way we grow things. That's all for today's episode. Yet before we close up, I'd like to say that this podcast is sponsored by electricfertilizer.com, where I myself offer books that teach the details about the science of electriculture. Furthermore, we have a number of products that we offer, most of which are homegrown, from spiral molds that allow you to create spirals for your garden much faster than by doing it by hand, to unique electronic systems that can be used to inject pulsed frequencies of electricity into the ground, giving your plants a boost with direct current electricity. As you could tell, this is a very, very interesting field with a ton of different approaches and methodologies. In the episodes to come, we're going to be going deeper into the techniques that we covered in this and the previous episodes, where Ray and I will be having deep conversations on all aspects of electroculture, magnetoculture, and beyond. Hit the subscribe button and subscribe to my newsletter on electricfertilizer.com. You can also follow me on Twitter via the handle ElectroGrow, through the Energetic Agriculture Facebook group, and if you want to reach out to me, I can be reached by the contact form on my website, electricfertilizer.com. Feel free to reach out if you have any questions or topics that you'd like me to cover. Until next time, I'll see you on the next episode of the Energetic Agriculture Podcast.